Hello, and welcome to episode number 93 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Anyone alive in the modern era is entitled to look at the startling conflux of transformational variables currently arising in our midst and conclude that this is a time of truly unparalleled change. Change so all-encompassing that it is virtually guaranteed that the world a decade from now will prove fundamentally different from the one we're in now, and even more contrastingly, different than the one any of us were born into. The UFO phenomenon, an ever-present specter in our midst, is a key element in this transformational stew. At this point, not only is new information coming to light on a yearly basis pertaining to this topic, but even on a monthly and sometimes even weekly basis. That is to say, while the modern UFO phenomenon traces its origin back 80 years or so, existing mostly in the fringes of polite society for that entire time, we are now in an era where it feels like at any moment this reality of mysterious others and their bewitching tech will be fully mainstreamed. Of course, once we cross this threshold, a key collective moment of contemplation awaits us, one that presents overarchingly profound questions about not just who they are, but who we are. And at that point, our entire civilization must endure a moment of deep reflective reckoning, a reckoning that acknowledges that almost nothing we've confidently believed about our reality is quite what it has seemed. If nothing else, this dawning realization will help us see that we've been living in some version of the Truman Show, where what we thought was real was more like a stage play. Even as we face this comprehensive recontextualization around our origins and our place in the cosmos, we are seeing our own civilization approach an apex moment, referred to by some as a singularity, where spiraling technological growth becomes not only irreversible, but so all-encompassing that it constitutionally changes what it means to be human. The sudden rise of artificial intelligence over the course of the last 12 months is front and center in this discussion. Of course, in addition to us approaching this moment of widespread acknowledgement of these others in our midst, happening just as we approach an apparent technological point of no return, there is also the matter of the increased engagement by some of these others with modern humanity. And of course, this raises a couple of intriguing questions. Number one, is the government's shift towards disclosure happening because they recognize that if they don't get ahead of the curve in terms of embarking on some plan of controlled disclosure, that the matter will be taken out of their hands altogether, resulting in what some have called catastrophic disclosure, speaking to its potentially devastatingly destabilizing impact on human civilization? Number two, are groups of these others ramping up their engagement with humanity precisely because that point of no return we are presently approaching at breakneck speed is so consequential that they have determined that letting us pass that threshold of our own accord is simply not tenable, primarily because they perhaps see that without intervention, that unaided crossing would inevitably ensure our own demise? These questions are simultaneously as profound as they are perplexing, arousing excitement in some and trepidation in others. And they are precisely the matters we'll be diving head-on into in this, the 93rd episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. As we begin this week's episode, I'd just like to point out that if you'd like to get access to all of my content, that includes not just Point of Convergence, but also Liminal Frames, as well as the feature series I create, of which there's now been two, as well as OTC Squared, Off the Cuff and On the Cusp, you can do so by either subscribing on Spotify or becoming a patron on patreon.com/exoacademian. Both of those options also give you access to my private Discord server where the community carries on conversation about these matters on a daily basis. Okay, with that aside, let's dive into this week's topic. We're going to be talking about disclosure, as well as other elements that are arising in our society right now, and how this conflux of variables, elements coming together, seem to be potentially pointing towards some key moment, some key turning point in human civilization. Now, on the one hand, perhaps that sounds a bit far-fetched to you. Perhaps that makes it sound like we're too much the center of the game here. I would suggest to you, though, that eventually any civilization does reach moments like this. And certainly the evidence seems to be pointing in this direction. And again, not just because of what's going on with the UFO phenomenon and the push towards public disclosure, but other elements that are arising in our midst as well, namely this thrust towards the technological singularity. Now, as many of you know, right now we are in the midst of trying to get this Schumer Amendment passed into law. This is happening as we speak over the last couple of days and going into next week. Now, as I've mentioned on other episodes of this podcast, as well as on Liminal Frames, the question that arises is, why is this disclosure push happening now? And not just some vague push towards something like disclosure, but this amendment speaking to very specific language around non-human intelligence and programs focused on reverse engineering of recovered UFOs / UAP, in other words, recovered technology from an apparently non-human source. And I would go even further than say apparently, because clearly from the legislation itself, they are pointing to historical enterprises where various defense contractors have actually been working on this technology, and that some of this technology indeed has filtered into modern society. Again, we think about revelations that came forward from people like Colonel Corso and the revelations in his book. Now, skeptics will point to the legacy of Harry Reid, who served as a United States Senator from Nevada from 1987 to 2017. He also led the Senate Democratic Caucus from 2005 to 2017, and was the Senate Majority Leader from 2007 to 2015. Now, Chuck Schumer was a friend of Harry Reid's, and so some people have suggested that this disclosure push, this amendment proposed by Chuck Schumer, is basically a nod to his old friend trying to champion a cause that he believed in, that is, UAP disclosure. Now, while that's certainly part of what's going on here, I want to point out that much more than that is involved, because clearly the specificity of this language is itself a kind of disclosure, where the language is meant to reduce the shock later on. Again, any politician worth their position is going to realize that when you have disruptive elements like this about to be introduced into society, you want to roll it out over time so as to minimize the disruption. So by using such specific language, not only does it make it more difficult for the secret keepers, the gatekeepers, if you will, to keep the secret secret, but it also prepares the American public and the rest of American government, for that matter, for what is about to come. And again, from there, we have a 5-10 year rollout. So this is a long-term plan to actually disclose this. And again, why would such a thing exist if there was no there? Clearly there is. And I would also point out that people like Chuck Schumer would not propose such legislation if it had not already been discussed with the White House. So clearly we have the legislative branch along with the White House working towards this disclosure. Now, right now, just to update you, what's going on as we speak is that there are various congresspeople pushing back, specific congresspeople who happen to serve in districts that house some of these defense contractors, the very contractors that supposedly might be holding some of this tech. So when these congresspeople see mention of eminent domain, meaning that this technology will be taken back by the government on behalf of the American people, these defense contractors balk at such a notion, and they speak to these congresspeople who are funded largely by these defense contractors. And they are trying to kill the bill, basically, or at least get that part removed so it has much less teeth. In addition to that, they are also trying to pull this 9-person panel that is supposed to be put together to consider all these matters, a multidisciplinary panel that is supposed to eventually brief the president so that the president can actually consider how best to roll this out and, again, to mitigate disruption in our civilization. So these sticks in the mud, if you will, that are trying to prevent disclosure from happening are both opposing the eminent domain clause and the notion of a 9-person panel put forward to brief the president. All of this, of course, speaks to the monetary concerns of these defense contractors, but not just that. It also speaks to the way that this actually will blow up into a full disclosure plan. And again, even that language is part of this legislation. So it's remarkable legislation, historic legislation, but as we speak, It's being debated as the Senate and the House try to mitigate concerns and come to some final bill that can be passed into law. But I also want to point out that this goes back prior to Chuck Schumer and prior to Harry Reid, or at least it's not limited just to Harry Reid, because there are notions that even under John Podesta, who of course served in the Obama administration and was going to serve in the Hillary Clinton administration, the plan was that there would be disclosure happening from 2016 on. As we all know, that's not how things worked out in the end. And that was a major missed opportunity in terms of disclosure. And Podesta has said that's one of his, if not his greatest regret. So that has been in the mix for a while now. But there's still the question of, even though there has been historic push for this, goes back to Podesta and Harry Reid and these people like this, but why, again, is there such a push now with such specific language? That's the real question. In other words, what it raises is the notion that perhaps something has changed, something about the calculus has shifted for the legislative branch and perhaps for the White House, because they know something is changing in our environment. And they recognize, as I said in the introduction there, that if they don't get ahead of the curve, that this is going to be taken out of their hands. And if disclosure happens in that way, in a way that is described as catastrophic disclosure, then the disruptive elements upon our society will rain down like a firestorm. At least that's what they're concerned about. And you can certainly understand why they would be concerned. Because again, what this speaks to, how deeply this impacts our notions of what is real, where we come from, how do we fit into the cosmic plan, all of these things are in play here. In other words, the biggest questions ultimately are on tap with this matter of disclosure. This is not simply about the notion that there are extraterrestrials that perhaps are aware of us and have been interacting with us in some way or another. This speaks to, again, our very origins, the nature of what's going on behind the scenes as we speak and has been pretty much for our entire civilization. Speaks to notions of accords that have been made between some of these groups of others and elements of the military-industrial complex, etc. Of course, it also speaks to technology that is so transformational that it could solve many of our current problems, while at the same time pose the threat of even more devastating weapons if, again, used by a civilization whose center of gravity of consciousness has not risen to a requisite level to know how to handle this technology. Now, on previous episodes of this podcast, I've mentioned a couple of notions that are quite shocking to many people, I would assume. Some of those notions have been part of the public debate for some time, at least within ufology circles. One has to do with John Ramirez, former CIA personnel, who's spoken to knowledge on the inside of something that is coming, something truly transformational, having to do with these others basically showing up, or if not showing up, then perhaps if they're already here, making their presence abundantly known. In other words, something akin to landing on the White House lawn, although I don't think it's going to take that particular form. The timeline for this kind of event has been tagged to 2027 or sometime around that kind of time frame. Now, interestingly, we also know various experiencers, Chris Bledsoe being one of them, has also had messages and visions that speak to the same general time frame. Now, in Chris Bledsoe's case, there's been a sense of global turmoil leading to a point where there is a choice put before humanity that will involve either consciousness ascension or a very, very difficult time that's even worse than the global turmoil we've already encountered or are about to encounter. But if we make the right choice, also the possibility of a new era of paradisal peace. Again, that's the messages generally that Chris Bledsoe has received. Again, not just him, but other experiencers too have spoken to this general timeline. John Ramirez, who also is an experiencer, but within his circles within the CIA, has spoken to knowledge on the inside in government and intelligence circles that something is happening around 2027, that this is part of the understanding. And both of these matters might speak to why there is such a push for disclosure at this time. Again, not just really vague disclosure, but very specific disclosure with a rollout plan in effect, basically a full-on disclosure plan. So those are the notions in the mix here as we think about, we contemplate why this is happening now. That's one possibility. Another possibility I want to introduce into the mix here, and I mentioned this in one other podcast episode, this has to do with the notion that some of these others have changed their calculus, that perhaps forgetting for a second this moment in time around 2027, they perhaps have decided that humanity needs to know sooner than later about their existence and about the larger context, because again, it's about so much more than just them being in existence and or being here. It's about the very nature of reality and how we fit into it, and how they may have even been, some of them, the progenitors of our civilization. And to this notion, I have heard that there was an approach made by a group of these others to three different nations. Now, it should not be surprising to you which nations those are. Some of the three most dominant nations on the planet as we speak, sociopolitically. Here I'm speaking of the United States, Russia, and China. And all three nations were approached with an ultimatum of sorts. It was an olive branch, but also an ultimatum saying, you need to embark upon this disclosure plan now. And it is suggested if you don't, then we will do it for you. So there's a sense of, if you want the people of the earth to believe that you are agents of your own future here and that you maintain sovereignty, then now is the time to begin to do this. And again, it wasn't mentioned as a threat. I don't want to imply that. I'm just saying that there is a sense that this does need to happen. We're happy to have you begin the process, but you do need to begin it now, or else we will do it for you. That's, again, another notion of catastrophic disclosure. Not just that leaks might eventually lead to this being known about in the public. For instance, if whistleblowers come forward with classified information, footage that speaks to the nature of this reality, perhaps even parading bodies in front of the public, who knows what might be in play, that's one possibility for catastrophic disclosure. But an even more catastrophic kind of disclosure would involve just a sudden showing up of these others in our midst. One second, they're behind the scenes. The next second, they're abundantly present in our society, in our midst, across the entire planet. And of course, I'm sure it's not hard for you to imagine how disruptive that would be. While some people would respond with amazement and awe, others would be terrified and be convinced this is the end of the world. And by the way, speaking to this notion of controlled disclosure, my friend Matt Ford of the Good Trouble Show recently summarized some of the presentation that Carl Nell made at the Soul Foundation event. He said, number one, we want a controlled disclosure. He also helped craft the Schumer Amendment. I'm speaking here of Carl Nell. He also said if disclosure were to happen too slowly, that would be a bad thing that would result in poor outcomes. And he also talked about this potential timeline and has been discussed. He also put together this graph that talked about the timeline and demonstrated it. Again, he also added, though, that nothing is written in stone. This is somewhat fluid. 2034 is a rough deadline in terms of where this all culminates. And there's also the sense that if they don't get everything out before then controlled disclosure is not really on the table anymore, which again, that begs the question, does he know something or is he just saying that's likely the case based on the way the timeline tends to be rolling out as we speak? And by the way, I would just point out that Carl Nell is one of the names that have been put forward as a possible replacement for Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick heading Arrow. I agree with Matt Ford that while he would be an excellent choice, I don't think he's likely to be the choice, mainly because I don't think that's the position he would want. He's better served and the process is better served with him being one of the advisors speaking to this. But I think it is important to point out again that he helped craft the Schumer Amendment. So when he speaks to these timelines and the why behind it, the reasoning, he's speaking to actually some of the reasoning that went into the legislation itself. So we now have some insight beyond just what's written in the legislation. Now, speaking of the Soul Foundation event, Christopher Mellon also presented there, and his presentation was also turned into an article that was published in The Debrief. And I want to highlight something he said in the presentation. He said, quote, Mr. Dalio also observes that when change comes, it is generally swift, devastating, and unanticipated. This conservative businessman sees a shocking 30% risk of civil war in America with what he characterizes as the next big risk point occurring around the time of the next presidential election. Dr. Ferrari offers a very different perspective, one that focuses primarily on global existential challenges facing our species. He states, quote, each of these problems, nuclear war, ecological collapse, and technological disruption, is enough to threaten the future of human civilization. But taken together, they add up to an unprecedented existential crisis, especially because they are likely to reinforce and compound one another, unquote. Harari later adds, quote, "If despite these common threats, humans choose to privilege their particular national loyalties above everything else, the results may be far worse than in 1914 or 1939, unquote. Now, this is very interesting because, again, the whole point of this particular episode is about not just the fact that disclosure is happening now, but the context in which it's happening. What might be going on with these others that's pushing disclosure? What might be happening behind the scenes that government circles are aware of that's pushing disclosure? And what is it about the nature of our overarching context in terms of near civil war-like state in the United States and increasing tensions among new global players, including China, for instance? How does this all play together? And of course, on top of that, we have this looming specter of artificial intelligence. We're going to get to that a bit later, too. I think this inevitably plays in to this entire equation. All of these things play in together in terms of, again, this conflux of factors coming together to make this such a consequential time. And I would suggest to you that all of these things are related, and that's exactly why this push towards disclosure is happening now, because it's about much more than just acknowledging these others in our midst. It's about recognizing that if we don't fundamentally change how we see ourselves, not just in relation to some others, but amongst a much more highly populated cosmic scene, we are likely to sow the seeds of our own demise and in the relatively near future. And that not only some of us in our society are concerned about that, but these others are very concerned about that. Furthermore, especially again, if time travel is mixed in here, if they can see a larger horizon than we can, they may know this is inevitably what we are headed towards without intervention, which might speak exactly to why they are intervening as they are now. Again, we think about this upticking engagement with us, and it all has to do with some sort of shift that must happen in our perspective, that consciousness ascension that Chris Bledsoe speaks to. That if this doesn't happen, then perhaps catastrophic self-annihilation lies in our not-too-distant future. Now, one thing I like to point out, not just in this episode, but in POC in general, as well as on Liminal Frames, is that we really need a multi-perspectival view to make sense of this dizzying array of factors. Speaking of that, not only is there strife, turmoil in the world that Chris Mellon spoke to, which again spoke to perhaps the need of disclosure happening sooner than later, but I would also point out that some of that tension, some of that strife, is being exacerbated by some of these others. And I want to make it very clear that when I say some, I do mean some, because there are some that are here that are kind of neutral. There are some that are here that have a very benevolent perspective and intention and are here to help. But there are others who actually sow discord, who can, behind the scenes, through psychic influence, both individually and collectively, increase the level of strife and tension in the world. And I would suggest to you that is happening as we speak as well, which again speaks to the need for us to pull back the curtain and see what's fully in play here, so that human beings can take the evolutionary step towards a greater self-awareness, a greater understanding of energetic influences that impact everything around us, so we can respond more comprehensively and more proactively. And this speaks to a tweet/post that I made just today. I said, quote, "There are various peculiarities that verge on taboos when it comes to the public UFO phenomenon discussion. For instance, while it's fairly common to see grays discussed, reptilians are almost never mentioned in polite society. People limit their own access," unquote. And this speaks to what I just spoke to, this notion of some of these others being here to sow discord, that they feed off this discord to some degree, not just in terms of what they can force us to do without us being aware, but also just the energy itself. So this speaks to the reptilian presence on the planet. Now, again, grays have been mainstream to some degree. They have appeared in much of our media and our films and things like that. Whitley Strieber's Communion book really helped to mainstream this notion of the grays. But of course, the reptilians are a bit more of a hidden shadow presence, a more nefarious presence that also needs to be reckoned with. And we need not respond with abject fear. We can respond with love and positivity and raise our consciousness in such a way as to make ourselves largely immune to those effects. But before that can happen, we have to be made aware as a civilization of these factors, of these psychic influences in our midst. And then we need to take responsibility both individually and collectively for our psychic health and influence on others. Now, again, much of this speaks again, and all comes back to consciousness. Now, earlier on, I spoke about how some of these defense contractors speaking through these people they're funding in terms of these Congress people who are trying to kill the amendment, basically that's about the monetary concerns of these companies. Now, speaking to this, Tom DeLonge recently tweeted slash posted that this is really unfortunate because disclosure and humanity's progress is being held up by capitalism. And I agree with him there, but I would go one step further and say that really this is about consciousness. Again, as I've said over and over again, this all begins and ends with our stage of consciousness. If we understood the predicament we were in, but we also understood how we can rise out of this predicament just with a shift in perspective, we would do so. The reason why we don't is because, unfortunately, a relatively low center of gravity still dominates. As I've said before, capitalism, while it has served us well up until now, it's the best available model that has existed. With the advent of artificial intelligence, when used correctly under the right perspective of consciousness, we could actually come up with new models that are even more beneficial to humanity and that would remove some of the negative elements of capitalism that also have done major damage to our society and to the environment we all are a part of. Now, in terms of this particular precipice we are standing at the edge of as we speak, it's not just about perhaps groups like the CIA and other intelligence circles knowing about something that's coming because of intelligence perhaps provided by these others. And it's not just about people like Chris Bledsoe being given messages directly by some element of these others. What also comes into play here, when really impacting collective events are about to take place, is precognitive awareness. In other words, knowing the future, sensing the future, especially when what is coming is particularly impacting. Now, I recently read a great book called Time Loops, Precognition, Retrocausation, and the Unconscious by Eric Wargo that really underlines how some of this has been happening in our midst all along. We also know about, for instance, major events like 9/11 being preceded by major moves in consciousness. Now, the way this works is that there are random number generators around the planet that are basically just taking a reading on an ongoing level. Now, when major events happen, not only do we see a sudden move towards non-randomness in these random number generators, but it happens before the events themselves, sometimes one or two days before. So what we're speaking to here is even on an unconscious level or a semi-conscious level, humanity is able to pick up when major events are about to happen. Now, again, this speaks to the fact, as we've spoken to on this podcast before, time is not what we think. We walk out because of evolutionarily derived interfaces that help us navigate an incredibly complex barrage of data, a certain kind of outlook. But our perspective is largely skewed. It's largely illusory. Time is not linear like we perceive it and as we experience it in our day-to-day lives. Again, there are non-ordinary state experiences that help you come to grips with this firsthand, and I've had several of those kinds of experiences. But again, this kind of reading done by random number generators before major events also speaks to the reality of this. Again, many people resist this notion because we're so convinced that the past precedes the future, and the past causes the future. But again, what evidence seems to suggest, even in terms of physics, is that you can do things retrocausally too. In other words, the future can influence the past. And in fact, what this book suggests is that you have kind of an interplay going on between the past impacting the future and the future impacting the past in kind of a loop, hence the name Time Loops. Now, while I thought this was an excellent book, it is a rather physicalist perspective on this matter. I think there are deeper thrusts going on here in terms of consciousness itself, and that these anomalies in space-time really speak to this deeper structure where consciousness is primary, as I've spoken to on many times on this podcast. But again, I say all this to point out that in addition to revelations brought forward by people like John Ramirez and Chris Bledsoe, there's also this sense amongst the experiencer community that something is coming. Now, again, I've given the analogy before of perceiving, for instance, when you drop a large stone into a pond, you get concentric circles that radiate outwards. And the larger the rock, the further those waves will extend. Now, picture those concentric circles extending into the past and the future. Now, in that sense, when a major event is about to happen, again, like 9/11, then you get this disturbance that's picked up by human consciousness, even on a semi-conscious or subconscious level, but that is strong enough to impact what we perceive as physical reality in terms of the readings taken by these random number generators. And again, I speak to this because many, many experiencers who are really tuned into these kinds of things and are used to having precognitive experiences, because again, one of the effects of having these kind of contact modality kind of encounters is that you do become precognitive to some degree. Many people do. And that can happen from a near-death experience or an encounter with these others or telepathic downloads or what have you. Even psychedelic experiences can unmoor us from our usual linear frame of time. But what many experiencers are perceiving is scenes that include the sky full of craft. I'm not talking about one or two craft, but the sky suddenly being lit up with craft everywhere, everywhere you look in the sky, which again speaks to just how present these others are in our midst, but in a stealthy way, so that when they do finally show up, it's not subtle, it's overwhelming in its scope. Now, speaking to this notion of precognitively perceiving some future event, or what Eric Wargo calls pre-membering, I tweeted/posted the following, quote, "Particularly impactful global events can produce precognitive effects in turn registered by random number generators. The combination of dawning disclosure and emerging general AI may be apexing in the future in such a way as to produce time quakes being sensed in the present," unquote. Now, I there mentioned again AI. I've said this several times in this episode already, hinting that this may be a major player in what's going on as we speak. Now, we've known that AI has been this dawning specter in our society, that we are made aware of almost on a daily basis that AI presents not just the possibility of astounding innovation in our future and problem-solving possibilities, but also presents real concerns about us losing control of our own future, and that by creating AI, we may be sowing the seeds of our own demise when it becomes more intelligent than us and ends up deeming us unnecessary, perhaps even like a virus on the scene. We think here again of the movie The Matrix. Now, this matter of AI is particularly pertinent over the last week or so because of a fiasco that happened around the company OpenAI. Now, what basically happened was the CEO of OpenAI, a man named Sam Altman, was suddenly fired from the firm almost overnight. Now, when revelations came to light as to the nature of this firing, what was behind the reasoning, what emerged was the sense that safety was a major concern. That basically, some breakthrough had been arrived at that goes beyond the large language models that have been fueling AI success up until now. This spoke to a breakthrough verging on what's called artificial general intelligence, and that this raised such concerns amongst the board for OpenAI that they questioned the wisdom of the actions of someone like Sam Altman, hence why he was suddenly fired. Now, I just want to point out here what a strange time we find ourselves in when we think about the advent of radio technology or television technology or even the dawn of the internet. We were not having this conversation around making sure we were balancing security in such a way as to not potentially destroy our civilization, sow our own demise, if you will. But that's exactly the place we find ourselves in now. And again, that's because AI presents such daunting possibilities, both for positive shifts as well as catastrophic shifts. And again, as I keep saying, which one we land on will come down to consciousness, collective consciousness, the center of gravity of consciousness amongst our civilization. Now, to that point, it doesn't exactly inspire confidence that just within one company, there was this major split amongst the board, for instance, around how they should proceed. And the concerns were suddenly so dominating in terms of perhaps we'd already crossed this threshold that was putting humanity itself at risk, that the sudden decision was made to fire the CEO so as to halt everything so we could reconsider. Of course, as most of us know, what happened is He ended up then going to Microsoft, and now there's been talk about him coming back to OpenAI. Most of the engineers and the people that work at OpenAI that are the heart and soul of OpenAI in terms of the technology moving forward basically revolted and said, we will all quit if you don't bring him back. So again, so much division, so much discord, so many different perspectives on what is the right thing to do here within one company. So again, how much confidence does that inspire in terms of how we as a civilization, with all the different worldviews and the different perspectives on reality and priorities, how we will make a decision as a collective in the best interest, not just of ourselves, but of the planet, of the biosphere, etc. Again, I would just point to you, this is partly why some of these others, the most ascendant of them, talk about collective consciousness and why that can be so helpful to address moments just like this, where decisions are so consequential for the health of the entire overarching environment. Now, by the way, speaking of this potential breakthrough that was reportedly made with what is called QStar, which is a new initiative run by OpenAI, this is how this was described. Quote, OpenAI have likely solved planning / agentic behavior for small models. Scale this up to a large model and you can start planning for increasingly abstract goals. It is a fundamental breakthrough that is the crux of agentic behavior, unquote. Now again, agentic, agency, sovereignty, this is what we're speaking to here. The possibility that AI now has reached the point of artificial general intelligence, in other words, passing the threshold very soon in terms of being more intelligent than a human being and not just following protocols it has been taught, but actually reasoning on its own. Again, that's the crux of agentic behavior, and that might be what we've reached at this point. And of course, because of the nature of technology and how it scales up exponentially, once that point has been reached, we could very, very quickly get to the point where its capacity is beyond our ability not only to control, but to even conceive of. Now, again, this all speaks to this singular moment we are perhaps approaching. We've got disclosure being rolled out by government because there's a sense that they must. It's not because they want to. It's not because they think they should do it because it's the right thing to do to let people know. No, they sense they must do this because something is coming that we must prepare for. And they are trying to do it in a controlled way so as to minimize disruption in getting there. But we must get there, is the sense, because something is coming. Not just perhaps this sudden arrival of these others in our midst, but also this arrival being tied to this turning point, this inflection point in our civilization's history. Now, speaking to this turning point, where it's the end of reality in one sense and the beginning of a new world in another sense, we should remember again that eventually this is part of the history of a civilization. When we think about this more energetically or spiritually, when we think about, for instance, how the raw contact material speaks to this, we have this sense that there comes a point where our planetary consciousness goes from 3D to 4D. And that also involves the movement of various humans at different levels of developmental consciousness to different contexts to aid their further development. According to the raw contact material, we've already crossed that threshold. The planet itself has already moved to 4D. And what we're seeing now is the consciousness quakes that are involved in that, and that very soon this planet will only host 4D kind of beings. In other words, beings that have ascended to a new perspective and therefore a new relationship with reality itself. Again, other beings are not doomed for destruction, but they will be placed elsewhere to continue their development. In other words, the point here is that sometimes we think what is normal is incremental growth and change. But number one, it's very clear because of this approaching technological singularity that, again, we're seeing exponential growth, which means that we are reaching a singularity point very, very quickly. Add to that what's happening in terms of these others engaging with us in a more dedicated fashion and the fact that government itself is preparing for some singular moment. All this seems to point towards the fact that we are living in truly consequential times, times that speak of the ending of one world and the beginning of another one. And as I said earlier, this also should involve, for those of us who are ready to make this ascension in consciousness to a new relationship with reality, of also understanding the necessity and the benefit of also coming together as a kind of collective consciousness, where the porousness between each of our consciousnesses becomes more paramount to the point where we can feel and reason together as a whole for our benefit and for the benefit of the entire environment around us. And this, of course, speaks to a transpersonal understanding. This is what we're getting to here, that technology alone will not be our salvation. Fundamentally, we need a shift in consciousness. Again, it all comes down to consciousness. When we look to technology to be our savior, while we still exist within siloed minds, working under the illusion of separation, then we are doomed to fail. We must transcend to this higher level of consciousness in order to overcome the challenges we are collectively facing. And with that in mind, I'd like to finish with this quote from Ken Wilber. He said, quote, "We have, for instance, placed upon technology the preposterous demand that it make this earth into a heaven, which means, in effect, that it turn the finite into the infinite. In the frantic and driven attempt to blow the finite up to infinite proportions, we have merely blown the finite up. We dislike its boundaries immensely, and instead of our truly transcending them, the now unconscious urge to transcendence drives us merely to disfigure and destroy them," unquote. Which again, this is another way of saying we are source consciousness. And the way that we get in touch with that again, the way we truly transcend, is to develop this transpersonal understanding, this fundamentally different sense of our essence of being. May we rise to the challenge, and in so doing, join this cosmic community all about us. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian or by subscribing on Spotify. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian signing out.